On this episode of Life After Abuse, I'll be speaking with Mr. Michael Bicking. Mr. Bicking is the chief of police at Westchester University in Pennsylvania. He has an extensive law enforcement background, having achieved detective sergeant status. At Westchester University, he's directly involved in criminal investigations and has served on the sexual assault committee for the university. In addition, he has expertise in Title IX investigations and is a Cleary Center compliance trainer. Mr. Bicking and I will be talking about the impact of assault on college campuses, what we can do to help keep our children safe, and what to do if there is a sexual assault.
Thank you for having me. My background started in municipal law enforcement, where I achieved detective sergeant status. Then I moved to Westchester University, where I was their detective for a couple years, and then went through a process and was selected to be the chief of police and director of public safety. So for 28 years after I was promoted, I was the chief of police for Westchester University, you know, in addition to being the director of public safety. The criminal detectives all reported directly to me, so I was intimately involved in all of our criminal investigations. I also served on the sexual assault committee for the campus, so I reviewed all campus sexual assaults. I was intimate with the investigations from a Title IX standpoint, and I'm also a Cleary Center trainer, and I've been doing that, I guess, for about 4 or 5 years. I decided to retire in 2017 from Westchester, and then, lo and behold, I was too young to retire in my mind and my wife's mind, so I chose to come to Eastern University, a small private school where they only have security. But some of my role here is, in addition to providing leadership to their public safety department, their security department, I'm also one of the fact finders, investigators for the Title IX complaints here at Eastern.
Can you talk a little bit about how parents and students should be thinking about, you know, their safety when they come on any campus across America?
I would say that one of the mistakes that our parents with college students happen to have is they believe that there is this safe border around all the colleges, that everything is going to be fine because the college is a safe environment. Well, I would tell you that there is no place that is 100% safe unless you're locked up in jail. You're pretty much safe if you can stay in a cell. We know that that's not what we want our college experience to be. So we want this open environment. And as a campus security professional, we are always balancing the openness and welcoming part of our campus with the security. And that's a very difficult balance to achieve. One thing that helps us is when parents sending their children to campus, when they start to set, when they prepare their students by saying, look, you have to take an active role in your security. You have to be aware of your surroundings. You have to understand the environment where you're at. That's not to say that they should walk around paranoid. It's not to say that should they fall victim to a crime, that in any way it is the victim's fault, because it is never the victim's fault. But if you're aware of your surroundings, if you're aware of where you're placing yourself, that's a big start to keeping yourself safe. Understanding that the reality is that there are people, all kinds of people on campus with all kinds of motives. So I think that is the one single thing that I feel will help parents keep their students safe, if they can prepare them as they go off to their next adventure in life in college, that they understand that.
So I think these are all really good points, and the idea that we do have to go into every interaction kind of thinking, well, what would this be like if I was outside of this college campus, right? You know, Would I behave differently? So that's really very helpful. What are you seeing in terms of any trends on, you know, campus abuse or assault? And if there are any trends, what do you think is driving them?
The trend that I'm seeing most anymore is a positive one, and that is that students are willing to report more than they were before. And I think that's a result of better educating the student, both from the K through 12 environment, and also I believe that college campuses are doing a better job getting students to understand their role as students, and that could be bystander training, that could be knowing what is a crime and what isn't. So I think that while there's lots of reasons why students and victims choose not to report, I think that right now I'm seeing sort of an uptick of victims being willing to report because they understand better, and there is a better trust factor between the college and their students.
There's oftentimes this reporter effect, right? We see this in medical conditions, right? Where we go, my gosh, why is there all of a sudden an uptick in disease X? And it's because we now have a new technology that can find disease X, right? So now we're seeing it more often. You know, it sounds like what you're also saying is that campuses are becoming more sophisticated in the environment that they are creating, where, you know, everyone understands that, you know, they are aware of abuse, assault, harassment, and whatever, and it's not going to be tolerated. Can you talk a little bit about that and what perhaps, you know, as you saw at Westchester or even in Eastern, like over the years, what is starting to change? What are campuses starting to do that's moving that needle?
I think that what's moving that needle, again, is the educational environment, but also if I'm a victim of a crime and I'm willing to report it, and you're a victim of a crime, but you hadn't been to this point willing to report it, and you see that the university, one, has given you care, provided you with counseling, or provided me with counseling and whatever else, and that they took my complaint seriously, they were nurturing, they showed that they cared, all of those things that a victim's looking for, you as a victim who at one point chose not to report may very well decide to report. Mm-hmm. And I want to believe that campuses have embraced this now. For years, and I as you can tell by the when you start clicking off the years in my bio, I came to higher education when bad news was a bad thing. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't the willingness, always anyway, for a campus to say, okay, we're going to accept this report, we're going to do everything we can, we're going to be as transparent as legally allowable, and we're going to take care of this victim. That's how I believe campuses are going into it now. Maybe back at one point they were saying, oh my, this is really going to be bad, it's going to affect our enrollment and all these other things, when in fact I believe that statistics, and I don't have any at my fingertips right now, but I believe that there are statistics out there that show that parents are seeing, if you're reporting zero crimes, chances are parents are going to think, I don't believe that.
Yeah.
If you're reporting crimes and you're also telling people in your annual security report of all the things that you have, that all the services and assistance that you're doing for your students, parents are going to realize that you are doing your job. We're doing our job, rather than putting all zeros and hoping to make this false appearance that we are absolutely safe and we don't have any crime. I mean, I can't imagine anywhere in the United States where someone could honestly say, oh, nope, we have absolutely no crime whatsoever on our campus. I've been in higher education long enough to know that things happen. And if we accept the reports and willingly and enthusiastically support the victim, that will shine through, and you will have other victims willing to participate in the processes and report. bystanders to say, hey, I need to help this victim out. I need to report what I know because they're taking it serious and I should too.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think those are really interesting points around really helping to create this culture where, you know, when you've got victims who are out there, they say what's happened to them, the school responds in a positive way, it creates a safety net for everyone and also a push for those bystanders, as you're talking about, to really come forward, because a lot of times there are bystanders. The bystander could be a dorm mate or resident, you know, advisor in the hall, you know, someone a year or two older, or it could be somebody who was at the event or near the event where, you know, where they've got some good information. So I think those are really important and excellent points. And I can tell you from our own experience, that absolutely was the case when my daughter was assaulted on a college campus. There were actually other men who came to her defense, right? And went on record, said, I will talk to the police. So, you know, we know that there are really good people out there and there's a lot more of them than bad people, but creating that culture that allows them to, the space, the freedom in which to operate and to know actually, Michael, how they can be helpful, right? I think that's really good. And so back on the how to be helpful sort of thing, you know, I as a parent, I attended the parent orientation. I sat through like the 3 days of the parent orientation and it was excellent at Chapel Hill, I must say. And of course, I never thought I'd be using any of this, but what should parents be thinking about? Because a lot of parents weren't there, right? They were, you know, getting, you know, dorm stuff, refrigerators or whatever. And that seems important at the time, but what sort of things do you do or does campus security do during orientation to really set the stage to help parents have those good conversations with their, you know, with their child going off to camp, going off to school?
Well, as somebody who did probably 28 years of those parent orientations from the stage to the parents, and also because I have a student in college right now, I've seen both sides of it. And the one thing that I would encourage all parents to do was to take a look at the colleges that they're looking at, look at their annual security report, their Clery report. There is an abundance of good information in there, not just the crime statistics part of it, but it incorporates VAWA and Title IX into the Clery report, and it will explain services that you have, policies that you have, security policies and procedures that are out there. It becomes like your operating manual for students and parents. Now, I will tell you that I am not naive enough to believe that students are going to read that, but parents really need to, because it will help them, one, understand what's going on that campus as far as what do they provide for support based both in any kind of criminal event or policy event or sexual assault, for that matter. So I think that too many people see that report as, oh, it's just something they have to do, not really interested. It is worth a read.
Okay, that's really very helpful. I bet that if you surveyed, you know, 100 parents, probably less than 10 would even have thought would even know what you're talking about, right? Even though, right, this has been out there for quite some time and seems to be even getting better, right? Like they're trying to streamline it a bit so that it's very clear about what's happened. So we'll definitely address that in another podcast. Just a question about, you know, victims. Okay, so then we have a situation where we now have a victim. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, in some of your experiences, what good looks like when a young person, male or female, says, I've been abused? What should be the next steps that they should expect from a school that is embracing all of the components of, you know, Title IX and support for students?
Well, federal law says under Title IX that you have to have a Title IX coordinator, someone that's responsible for the coordination of compliance with Title IX. Most campuses are pretty good at getting that information out on as to who the Title IX coordinator is. But either way, if you are a victim, the first thing, especially of a sexual misconduct of any kind, whether it be harassment to assault, you should ask to speak with your campus Title IX coordinator. That will get you services like accommodations for housing or academics. It will provide the victim with on and off campus services, witness services, victims advocacy services, all of those other kind of things that you will probably not know or not get a comprehensive list of what is available to you unless you go through your campus Title IX coordinator.
So that's really very helpful, because that's a one-stop shop there, right? I mean, because
yes,
people are really scared. And actually, in our situation, what happened was, because Miranda went to the hospital, that immediately triggered a Title IX coordinated event, right? Because that hospital was a campus hospital. And I often wondered, so thank you so much for talking about this, Michael, because I often wondered, well, if she had been at a smaller school, not kind of a sprawling university with lots of services, you know, where would she have gone? So you've now answered that question. That's the first place that parents and victims should look for. So that's really helpful. So can you talk a little bit about local law enforcement versus campus police? Because, you know, I think there's always this outstanding question when you have a crime that has taken place. You know, do you go to your campus security or do you just go to the police? So how do you guys work together on this?
It's interesting. There's a provision in Title IX that says that you can request who you report your crime to. So that means that if for some reason you don't have a good feeling about campus law enforcement, and I don't believe for a minute that any police department would blow off of a sexual assault, but who knows? But if you don't have that same kind of confidence in your campus security or campus police, you may contact your local law enforcement. That's one of your rights. You would not know that unless you go to your Title IX coordinator. You may think that you have to go to the campus police, so you don't. Typically, you have most campuses have a good rapport with their local surrounding municipal police. In fact, it's one of the statements that you need to have in your annual Clery report, is how you interact with and your relationship with local law enforcement. So that would probably be step 1A. So while you're trying to decide if you become a victim and you're trying to decide what to do, I think you need to reach out to your Title IX coordinator on your campus so that you can get what's available to you. And they will also become an advocate for you to tell you and encourage you probably to go report it to police. I would tell parents of victims not to force a victim to do anything. So I would never encourage friends or parents to encourage a victim and say, you got to call the police and browbeat them for that or whatever they want to do. The whole idea of being a parent in this type of situation is you have to be supportive. Even if you believe absolutely positively they need to call the police, I think you need to be supportive of your child and the victim. And while you can be encouraging them to go seek out help, whether it be and report it to police or whatever, whatever you do, don't push the victim. The victims need support first, and be okay with their decisions, because victims go through a number of phases, and while they may not want to report it now, they may report it at a later date. But if you push a victim too hard, they may never report it, and they may never be able to get past it because they feel like they didn't have that support.
Michael, that is excellent advice. Part of the reason of starting this podcast was because we wanted to help victims have a life after abuse. and how the people who care about that victim respond in those first days to months really does set that victim, I believe, on a certain trajectory.
I agree.
So this is really very helpful information. You know, someone, you know, kind of said to me that, and it's kind of a slight segue, but kind of on a similar theme, they were saying that they felt as if some of the new administration, the Trump administration and the Department of Education guidelines or whatever, they're creating a sense of a backlash against victims' allegations and, you know, allowing more protection for alleged perpetrators. And while obviously, you know, no one wants to harm someone as an alleged perpetrator who did not perpetrate an act, I think that there's a sense of kind of like, wow, all these cases are coming out, and it could, you know, mean that my son is falsely accused. As a matter of fact, a friend came to me the other day, and she had had lunch with a group of women, and they came on this topic, and the woman said, you know, I don't know about all these victims, but I'm more worried about my son being falsely accused. And of course, this could apply to male on male or you know, male sexual abuse or assault as well. What is your sense of how or if that's changing, or if you know, if people need to be more concerned, or if there are different steps they need to take, you know, in the future than they have been in the past?
Well, first off, I think that's why it's so important for parents to speak with their new students, with their children. It's not just about, hey, don't become a victim, but also, and I'll use, because I have a son, I spoke in depth many times, and he would be the first one to tell you many, many times, about how to act appropriately in a college environment. There still exists that underlying belief that certain things are okay because it's a rite of passage for college. Well, it's not. It never has been. And we need to make sure that we prepare our children to understand that there is no privilege for bad behavior. There's no rite of passage for bad behavior. So there's consequences that go along with every decision we make. So I would say that would be the first step. But also, when Title IX, when they started to create the big push for Title IX again a number of years ago, we as humans tend to take everything to extreme. I don't know why. I'm not a social scientist, so I can't tell you why. I'm sure there's somebody out there that could. But all of a sudden, campuses were receiving reports, some, not all, were receiving reports, and automatically the respondent was guilty. And they created an environment where their fact-finding investigation may have been tainted because they had already made their decision. So I think that the pendulum kind of swung a little bit towards, hey, wait a minute, hold on. Not every victim story is true, and not every respondent is guilty. I want to believe that we have swung back to the middle, and that campuses are now understanding that you cannot go in with a bias. You cannot go in as a fact finder biased to either side. Fact finding means you establish, you investigate the facts as they come. You don't make the facts fit your predetermined end. So I want to say that was a number of years ago, a couple of years ago. I would agree that there was some fear, genuine fear from parents who believed that their child might be accused falsely, and also that victims were feeling as though they weren't being believed. But I think that I really want to believe that we have passed that point in our history.
Yeah, thank you for that, Michael. And I was reading recently that, you know, the way investigations are being conducted, you know, completely matches what you're saying. What I was really happy to see is that the investigators are often independent of the university, or are always perhaps independent of the university, and so therefore come into it looking at it very differently. Is that a correct statement?
Well, I think that there's a number of campuses, there's a number of ways to do it. Like I said, I do some of the fact finding for my campus. I'm also a trained investigator, so I know not to get caught into a situation where I believe this is what happened and then find the facts that support that. I go in as an unbiased person trying to just collect the facts and not try to meet an end that I've already established. Yes, there is a number of folks out there, law firms and professional investigation firms, that are now serving as Title IX investigators for campuses. I think that both can be effective. It just means that you have to make sure that people are, they understand the draw of wanting to make a conclusion immediately without truly looking at the facts. A third party certainly will do that most of the time, but I do think that on campuses you can find folks using your own resources that can do that same thing if the campuses are comfortable doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really interesting point because it gets back to something that you and many others have also talked with me about. You know, we need to make sure that we create the right space for time of investigation, right? Like to get it right. And so in that interim, our primary responsibility should be as parents and others to support the victim, right? You know, it's I think that someone said, you know, it's not like it is in Law and Order, right? Things aren't summed up in 45 minutes. So in that interim, making sure that there's the good counseling, there's the good, you know, medical attention, and the sort of things that that victim is going to need to be able to get, you know, her or his life back on track. So that's a really helpful comment that you made. So I appreciate that. So, Michael, I'd like to end this segment with four questions that I ask everyone. What one thing would you like for victims of abuse or assault to know?
I'd like them to know their rights. And there's a couple ways they can know their rights, hopefully prior to being a victim, but certainly after becoming a victim. And that is read the Clery Report. Read the annual security report that comes out that's required to be published every October 1st to every student, every current student, every current employee, every prospective student, and every prospective employee. Understand what is available to you on your campus. That will give you ways to and resources and services that are guaranteed to you. And then also find out who your Title IX coordinator is. It's imperative that they know that so that they can get those services and those accommodations should they become a victim. And then I would say have fun in your next life. Don't go around being paranoid, but always be aware. And they are two different things, being paranoid and being aware. And I would encourage students to do that. There's plenty of programs out there like RAD that will teach you some self-defense. Not everybody's built for that. Not everybody mentally can be able to fight. They may be wired to flight. So if that's not for you, then it's not for you. You shouldn't feel bad about it. But try to find all the resources that you can get that are available to you and decide which ones fit you.
Okay, terrific. So name one thing that we as a society should be doing to stop abuse and assault.
Well, I think that we're on that road, but by the same token, it seems like there's a number of tribal philosophies now. So I think that we need to get back to caring for one another, despite whether we agree about conservative views or liberal views or progressive views. Be willing to take care of each other. Views and politics and all the other things aside, take care of each other. I think that if we can get to that, it will make a whole lot of difference, and it will stop some of the nonsense that happens. And also, it will put on notice to the victims that, hey, we care, and to those who want to do harm to others that, hey, we don't accept this, and we're going to prosecute you. We're going to take every action we can against you if you act in a criminal way.
Okay, Michael, and I think you may have answered my last question with that last statement, but I just want to verify. So my last question is, what is the most important thing we should be doing to help support victims, and why?
Well, I think you mentioned it early on in our conversation that the type of support that you give a victim can have a lasting impact on whether or not they ever are able to fully get past or accept what has happened. I think that the more caring we are, the more we provide assistance and our willingness to take care of our victims will assist a victim in getting to the next step in their lives rather than being haunted. They may always have a certain amount of haunting from becoming a victim, but they're never going to get by it if we don't provide them with the caring environment that they deserve.
Michael, thank you so much for coming on Life After Abuse.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Life After Abuse. Until next time, do one thing to support female abuse victims. Remember, they are counting on us. If you want to find out more about Life After Abuse or would like to be interviewed, please visit the website, lifeafterabusepod.com. That's lifeafterabusepod.com. Take care and be well.